When I was 9, a bomb went off at a roller skating rink during a 9-year-old girl's birthday party. It made the local news, even though it happened somewhere on the East Coast, 2,000 miles away from me. Since I loved roller skating, and the children there were the same age as me, I could not shake the tragedy from my mind. I pictured that these victims were just like me, 9-year-old girls with the same interests I had. I dropped my skating hobby, and I kept wondering about how the survivors were doing. On the news, they gave an address where you could send cards, checks, and gifts. My mom knew I was having trouble with the incident, so she suggested I make cards and pick out some toys to send to the kids. While shopping for toys, I picked out construction paper, glitter, and stickers for the cards I was planning on making. My favorite card was made out of pink paper with "Get well soon" written in purple glitter, a blue glitter border around the edges, hearts made with opalescent glitter, and cat and unicorn stickers covering the rest of the space. A couple weeks after everything was mailed, I kept wondering who received what I sent, and what were they like? Did the kid who received my pink card love it as much as I did? As the years went on, my obsession with the bombing did not abate. I kept wondering, where are the survivors now? How are they? I would go to the library and ask the librarian for information about the event, and I would make copies of everything from the books and magazines. I printed out every article found online and from old newspapers viewed on microfilm. When the survivors became adults, it was easier to find more information because their names were finally revealed. I would analyze photos of them to see if there was sadness behind their eyes or if there was some way to tell what they had been through. They all recounted what they remembered, as they had been doing for years. Their tales most likely had been heavily edited to ensure the reader would get emotional. There were always mentions of smells like ice cream and cake, about the laughter of the kids, and how there was loud music being piped through the speakers. We were meant to become immersed and feel the tragedy as if we were present or we were watching the event play out. It's a little sick, but writers love doing that shit to us. By the end of the article, there would be something positive to make us feel good and to change our sad tears to happy tears. I hated that aspect of the articles because it felt like these people were being used in order to prop up self-obsessed journalists. I wanted to know the bare truth without someone else's embellishments glued onto their stories. I would daydream about meeting the victims and getting to ask my own questions. It would be chance meetings, like sharing a dorm room and finding out my roommate was one of them. We would get pizza and talk all night about what happened to her. I would finally understand how the disaster shaped who she was and the effect it had on her. Then I would think, in this hypothetical situation, could we have been good friends? I can't relate to someone on that level, and I didn't think I could put up with the baggage. Or can I? Are these people just like me? Like they were before the misfortune? If the bombing had never happened, would they be where they are right now? Who would they be? Those questions sparked my curiosity and my imagination. I'd never been much of a writer, but I wanted to explore all of these thoughts and questions and get them out of my head. At first, I only wrote narratives that were a couple pages long, which answered all of my questions from the viewpoint of the survivors. Many years later, I was finally able to write a novel about a fictional tragic event and the outcome it had on those who survived it. My freshman roommate got a job at a large publishing house, and since it's all about who you know, my book was published, and it became a bestseller. While on a book signing tour, I got to travel all over the country. One of the stops was the city where the bombing had happened. It was an odd turn of events. My fortune and my visit was a result of this city's misfortune. A new question came to mind. If the bombing had never happened, Where would I be right now? Not here. The area was quite lovely, and I could picture myself living there. Plus, if the city's history had already inspired me enough to write one novel, maybe this is what I needed to pursue writing as a career. I packed up my belongings and moved out east. One night, after settling into my new place, I was watching one of my favorite horror movies when I heard sirens going by outside. At first, I didn't pay much attention, but then there were more and more, and it was hard to ignore them. I turned around on the couch so I could look out the living room window. Everything in my house had been unpacked, and the only thing that was needed still were curtains, so I was able to see a panoramic view of the outdoors. The first thing I noticed was that the house directly across from mine also didn't have curtains, and another one of my favorite scary movies was playing on their TV. Then I observed a man peering out of that window, probably for the same reason as me, and a split second later, he caught sight of me as well. I waved and smiled, which seemed like the neighborly thing to do, and he did the same in return. I mouthed, "Bye," and I gave a small wave and turned back toward the TV. That Saturday, I went out for a walk around the neighborhood. When I got close to my house, I was on the opposite side of the street and was about to cross when I saw my neighbor from the other night on his porch. Figuring it would be nice to get to know my neighbors, I approached him. He was playing video games on a handheld device. "Hi, I'm Natalie. I just moved in across the street," I said while pointing to my house. "Hello," he said while briefly looking up to see me. Then he looked back down at his game and he continued, "I'm Jake." "It's nice to meet you," I said. "Same," he said without lifting his head. It seemed he was either shy or he didn't want to be bothered, so I exchanged goodbyes and went back home. On Sunday, I decided I needed to see the area where the rink had been located. I didn't know why I needed to do this. There was just some internal need. Maybe because if that rink hadn't existed, I wouldn't even be living there. A good portion of my life was rooted in the tragedy that took place there. I went to the old address, and in its place was a strip mall. One store was the most noticeable, because a couple kids were skipping toward it, and four children were on benches in front of the ice cream parlor, licking pastel-colored ice cream cones without any knowledge of the carnage that took place there years prior. I wanted to be one of those children right now. Using my cell phone, I compared a picture of the skating rink and its surroundings to what now filled the same space. That's when the chills started to hit me, and tears began to well up in my eyes. It was surreal. The closest way to describe how I felt would be what I remembered feeling while watching news footage on September 11th, 2001. Memories of first hearing about the birthday party bombing began to bombard my mind. My legs were giving out, so I sat down on the lawn and let the tears fall. I wondered if there was a plaque somewhere discussing what happened. Once able, I walked around trying to find one, some sort of reminder of what took place there, but I couldn't find anything. All I saw were people of all ages and good spirits dashing in and out of different doors. When I returned home, I didn't want to be alone, and I realized that moving to a town where I didn't know anyone may have been a mistake. I saw Jake putting away his lawnmower, so I crossed the street and met up with him. "Hi, Jake." "Hey, sorry, I'm horrible with names. Natalie," I said. "Right, sorry again. Are you also melting in this heat?" I laughed. "Yeah, I am. This is perfect ice cream and popsicles weather." "I don't know if you're from around here, but if not, there's a place called Connor's that makes the best ice cream in the world," he said. "Well, I just saw the place you're talking about earlier today, but I didn't know that it was the best." "I'm the ice cream connoisseur. I've had the delicious frozen treat all over the seven continents, so take my word," he said. "Really? Even in Antarctica?" I asked. "Oh, that's where I had the most. Ice cream shops every 10 feet," he laughed. "But seriously, I've been going there since they opened when I was 11. It tastes amazing. Do you find it... I just stood there with my mouth open, trying to get the words out. I mean, you know what happened. Why couldn't I just form a complete sentence? There was the bombing, I said. Wow, you know about that? Yeah, it was horrible. I bet it really shook everyone up here. Jake shrugged. Sure, but things happen. We moved past it, he said. How? I asked. Natalie, would you like to come in for some lemonade? His invitation took me by surprise, but I was more than happy to join him. After following the recipe on the bottle of lemon juice and adding some ice cubes, he handed me my glass, and I followed him to the kitchen nook where we sat down at the table. So did you know anyone who was affected by the bombing? I asked. Yes. If you know about the bombing, then I'm sure you've heard everything there is to know. I know Sarah and Jessica did interviews recently. Wow, you know them? I said. I grew up on the same block as them. I lived 3 houses down, so we did everything together. Do you still know them? Well, they're social media now, so a lot of our communication is on Facebook, but I see them around a lot. Before asking how the bombing affected his friends, I excused myself to use the restroom. While walking toward it, I passed the living room, and on the mantel was something that caught my eye. It couldn't be, I said to myself. There was a picture frame with a faded piece of folded construction paper. In glitter were the words, "Get well soon." There was also a border around the front and hearts made out of glitter. I swore that was the card I made for one of the victims. Jake, can you please come here? I heard footsteps, and then once he reached me, he said, "What's up?" I pointed to the card. "Where did you get this?" "It is such a coincidence that you ask, because we were just talking about the bombing. I was at the skating rink when the bomb went off, and right before I was discharged from the hospital, I was given this card." That didn't make sense. I didn't know of any boys who were there. "Why haven't I heard about you?" "I wasn't hurt badly at all. And once I turned 18, I didn't want any of the attention from what happened. So my name was never released." There were so many things I wanted to say and ask, but the most important statement came out first. I made that card. "You're Natalie Crutchfield?" he asked. "I am." I stared at the frame and then said, "I always wanted to know who got my card." "Me? I always wanted to meet you," he said. "Me? Why?" "During a difficult time in my life, you showed me there was good in this world, that there was someone out there that I didn't even know who was thinking about me and who cared." I started crying, but I think they were happy tears that time. "I cared a lot. I still do. I haven't been able to stop thinking about that day and what happened and how it probably affected you guys." "Thank you, but I'm fine," he said. "It was an isolated incident, and it could happen anywhere." "Huh," I said. "I love how you've handled this." "It wasn't easy at first, but your card made a big difference. It made me look at the bright side, and I've kept it as a reminder to look for the good in people," he said. That interaction with Jake changed my whole perception of so many things in my life. It helped me let go of all the heavy baggage I'd been carrying for so many years. We became very close after that day. In fact, I need to go now, because we are going roller skating and then out for ice cream at his favorite place. And I couldn't be more excited.